This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Making health insurance demands. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Monday, June 26th. Welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
Republican senators are making known their wish list on a health insurance overhaul. The current measure does not have enough GOP support.
Overwhelmed by lawsuits and costs for a recall, the airbag company Takata has filed for bankruptcy.
A 14-year-old girl from Delaware fell out of a gondola ride and into the arms of strangers in an upstate New York amusement park.
And how TJ Maxx is outperforming all its big retail rivals.
Today, as more and more shopping is done online, and you know, Amazon is kind of leading the path with technology and data and analytics, TJ Maxx is really sticking with a strategy from an old school era in retailing.
Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner on how TJ Maxx is getting it done while others are not. She's here in about 20 minutes. We'll start in Washington, where Senate Republican leaders are facing pushback from lawmakers on a number of issues as they try for a vote this week on a measure that would overhaul the health insurance system. Demands include adding funds for particular areas such as opioid treatment. But GOP senators are especially divided over the bill's cuts to Medicaid, specifically the growth in Medicaid cuts, the health program for the poor that covers one out of every five Americans. Senator Susan Collins of Maine was on ABC's This Week.
Very concerned about the cost of insurance premiums and deductibles, particularly for that very vulnerable group between the age of 50 and 64.
In addition, four conservative senators who don't like the bill's retention of requirements for insurers to cover patients at the same price, regardless of their medical history and with set benefits packages. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he wants a vote before Congress's July 4 recess. If he gets at least 50 votes, with Vice President Mike Pence breaking a tie, the House could then take up the Senate legislation, or the two chambers could try to reach a compromise. A tourist boat capsized yesterday on a reservoir near the Colombian city of Medellin. At least six people are dead, with a couple of dozen missing, among the estimated 160 or so on board. We get more on the story from this morning's Mike Gavin.
In addition to first responders, including firefighters and Air Force pilots and helicopters, the searchers and rescuers include people on recreational boats and jet skis. Dramatic videos on social media show the party boat rocking back and forth as people crawled down from a fourth-floor roof as it sank in a matter of minutes. Survivors described hearing a loud explosion a few minutes after the cruise began. As water flooded on board, pressure built, and people were sucked under by the sinking ship. Nobody was wearing a life vest, and there's no passenger list. Gordon.
Almost unthinkable. Thanks, Mike. Carlos Espinoza, by the way, who's an independent journalist from the town of Guatape, that area, told the Associated Press that about a month ago, some people woke up to find the El Amarante boat filled with water and sinking at its dock, suggesting that perhaps the vessel was not ready to return to the water. A 14-year-old girl dropped from a slow-moving gondola ride into the arms of strangers at the Six Flags Amusement Park north of Albany, New York. It happened Saturday night. The girl from Delaware was dangling about 25 feet off the ground, holding with her arms, with her little brother sitting next to her in the green two-person pod. He was crying hysterically. A 47-year-old man named Matthew Howard and his 21-year-old daughter, Leanne Winchell, positioned themselves under the girl as the ride came to a stop. He yelled, "It's okay to let go. I'll catch you, honey." The two took the brunt of the girl's fall, with all of them tumbling to the ground after the catch. Nobody was seriously injured. The scene was caught on video by Lauren Lent from Glenville, New York.
You don't know what to do. I mean, you know, you understand that, you know, somebody falling from 35 feet in the air, could cause damage to you or whoever you're catching it with, but it's better off to suffer a minor injury to save someone.
It's not clear how the girl slipped out of the ride. Officials inspected it and said it was in proper working order. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Glad you could be with us on this Monday. President Trump, as you know, has many supporters who are still solidly behind him and unfazed by the Russia investigation. A recent college grad in North Carolina, in fact, said, quote, "It's a witch hunt to try to make the president look bad." But Wall Street Journal reporter Janet Hook says Mr. Trump appears to be losing ground among those who voted for him as an anti-Hillary Clinton vote, just at a time he needs political capital to push legislative agenda through Congress. Janet, give us some background.
Well, this is a story that I wrote based mostly on interviews backed up by some of our recent poll data. What I've been doing is through the course of the year, I've assembled a group of voters that I go back to every now and again to see how their opinion about Trump has changed over time. And it's not scientific, but I chose a bunch of voters who had supported Trump, but when they voted for him, they had mixed feelings. They were ambivalent. Some of them were voting for Trump just because they didn't like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Because what I thought would be important would be to see how those voters responded to his presidency. Did they come around to support him more wholeheartedly, or were they driven away? And this is the first time that I've interviewed them that I saw signs of them, any of them, drifting away. The first few months of Trump's presidency have been so stormy, and a lot of them seemed just disappointed that he wasn't kind of delivering on his strong campaign promises.
And just to be clear, this is, I think it was a journal survey, of, I don't know, a month or so ago, found something like the Trump supporters who voted for him because they liked him, like 98% would do it again or something like that. This is a group of Trump voters who were anti-Hillary that you've that you're revisiting.
Right.
Yeah. So
Who were anti-Hillary, or when they voted for him, they had real reservations.
Okay. So which promises have you found they said they're, you know, they were more hopeful about?
Well, they were a lot were had really counted on him to deliver on abolishing or reforming Obamacare, the health care law, the commitment to improving the economy, the crackdown on immigration. And I think the main thing that I found these voters responding to, it was interesting, none of them seemed nearly as preoccupied with the Russia investigation as people in Washington are.
Yeah.
But the concern was that because it was so preoccupying to the White House that it was getting in the way of him actually advancing tax reform or repeal of Obamacare.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal national political reporter Janet Hook. She's written a piece entitled Signs of a Softening Base. There was one woman you talked to, too, who said she was frustrated even by his tweeting.
Oh, yes, there's a lot of that. And, you know, to be honest, they've been frustrated with that all along. There was a sense before he was sworn in that, okay, so the tweeting, that was just kind of a campaign gimmick, or it was something that he'll stop doing when he becomes presidential. And, of course, he never did tone it down. In fact, if anything, it's become more central to his mode of communicating with the public. There are probably a lot of voters who like that, you know, kind of direct window into what Donald Trump's thinking. But most of the voters that I've been talking to in this select group are very frustrated. They just think that it's distracting from advancing his agenda.
Yeah. So are they in wait-and-see mode? Or are they willing to give him more time? It's been, you know, 5 months. How much time are they going to give him, I guess?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, most of them are not saying that they regret their vote.
Okay.
I don't think there was nobody I talked to who said they regret their vote. And most of them are still in wait-and-see mode. But there were a couple who were just thinking, wow, this is really costing him support from me and from people I know.
What else jumped out at you? Anything else you feel is worth a mention?
Yeah, one thing that I was struck by was a couple of people that I talked to actually felt, when I said, how has the Trump presidency affected your life or your family's life or your community? Thinking that probably most of them would say, you know, not really. I mean, I don't know. He hasn't gotten anything done. But there were some little things that they pointed out to. I talked to a woman in Wisconsin who thought that Trump's trade policies which is something that the president can advance without Congress, that his trade policies had hurt the dairy industry in her area, or another woman who had qualified for, just recently qualified for federal disability benefits, was worried because she'd seen that he'd proposed curtailing the disability benefits. So even if you feel like Trump's agenda is kind of frozen and not getting anywhere in Washington, I think people are starting to get a sense that his presidency is making a difference for good or ill.
Thanks, Janet. Wall Street Journal reporter Janet Hook. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Former President Trump says congressional Republicans are close to passing a health overhaul to replace the Affordable Care Act, but some lawmakers have doubts. Trump appeared on Fox and Friends.
I don't think they're that far off, you know, famous last words, right? But I think we're going to get there.
That optimism runs counter to the public opposition of 7 to 8 Republican senators in the Senate GOP plan. Unless those holdouts can be swayed, their numbers are more than enough to torpedo the measure developed in private by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. A tourist boat packed with about 160 passengers for the holiday weekend capsized on a reservoir near the Colombian city of Medellin yesterday, leaving at least 6 people dead and 31 missing. Dramatic video circulating on social media show the party boat rocking back and forth as people crawled down from a fourth-floor roof as it sank in a matter of minutes. Government websites, many of them in Ohio, were hacked yesterday with a message that appeared to be supportive of ISIS. The same message also infiltrated government websites in the town of Brookhaven, New York, and Howard County, Maryland. Adam Levin is a cybersecurity expert.
It is disturbing, certainly unsettling, but unfortunately becoming more and more of the new normal.
In the past, the group also claimed responsibility for similar hacks in Wisconsin, Scotland, and Sweden. The scorching weather that ravaged the Southwest last week will cool somewhat this week, but life will remain more than uncomfortable for 23 million people still under an excessive heat advisory. Although Phoenix topped out at 116 degrees yesterday, meteorologists say the Southwest will begin to cool off in the coming days. An original map of the first Disneyland park is sold for $708,000 at an auction in California. The 1953 drawing was used by Walt Disney to secure funding after his own studio refused to fund the site. The map was personally annotated by the creator of Mickey Mouse and reveals a picture of Walt Disney's vision for the theme park built in 1955. The artist's impression was given to an employee and remained out of public view for more than 60 years.
Wow. $708,000 it fetched.
Isn't it amazing to think that Disneyland has been around since 1955?
True. Yeah. It's just an amazing amount of money for that. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Traditional retailers are in crisis, damaged by rapidly shifting consumer tastes, technological change, and cutthroat price competition. And then there's TJX, parent company of TJ Maxx and Marshalls, which is benefiting from the idea that under the right circumstances, people still like to shop in stores. It's a story from Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. Suzanne, what's up?
Well, you know, today as more and more shopping is done online and, you know, Amazon is kind of leading the path with technology and, you know, data and analytics, TJ Maxx is really sticking with a strategy from, you know, an old school era in retailing. It's all about merchant instincts, and it spends a lot of time training its merchandise buyers and teaching them how to find great products that it sells at great prices. And, you know, the strategy is working for them. Their sales are growing, and they're opening more stores, and only about 1% of their business right now comes from e-commerce.
You're kidding. 1%?
1% out of about $33 billion in annual sales.
Holy cow. So you mentioned these merchant instincts. Did they get away from that at some point?
No. In fact, TJ Maxx has, TJX, as the company's called, has stuck with that. You know, they have sort of an obsession with this. And it's, you know, for the past 33 straight quarters, they've had sales increase at stores open in at least a year. Now, that's like unheard of for other retailers. You've seen Macy's, Nordstrom, Penney's, you know, sales declining, closing stores, and so they're really moving in the opposite direction by, you know, zigging when everybody else is zagging.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. She's written a piece called How TJ Maxx is Bucking the Crisis in Retailing. So are they ignoring online, or that's just gravy to them at this point? How do they treat that?
They do have a small online business, and they've struggled a little bit with figuring out how online best works for them, because their whole sort of secret sauce is this treasure hunt. And, you know, the idea is shoppers never know what bargains they're going to find, because there's the merchandise turns over so rapidly that, you know, you go back from one week to the next and there's new stuff in the stores. And so it gives shoppers this, you know, sense of like, let me comb through the racks, because I never know what I'm going to find. It's very hard to replicate that online. And they had the TJ Maxx brand had some trouble with its website. They launched it initially in 2004 and then closed it a year later. They didn't relaunch it until 2013. So it's clearly an area that they've struggled to figure out. But not being online hasn't really hurt their overall business.
It's almost amazing, isn't it? That 1% stats? Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Monday, June 26, Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Republican senators outline their health law demands. A tourist boat sank in Colombia with deadly results. An oil truck explosion in Pakistan has killed more than 150 people. High winds will make wildfires worse in the West today. Takata files for bankruptcy protection. Game one of the College World Series tonight, LSU in Florida. Ichiro is the oldest player now to start a major league game in center field. He's, what is he, like 73? And the award for the world's ugliest dog. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, there are nearly 7.5 million Americans living with psoriasis, a chronic inflammatory disease of the immune system, and up to 30% of those people with psoriasis may eventually develop psoriatic arthritis, a potentially debilitating disease involving joint inflammation that affects an estimated 1 million people. The many faces of psoriatic disease include Olympic swimming champ Dara Torres, one of the fastest female swimmers in history, who's also an author. She's promoting a campaign called Show More of You. Dara, explain the disease.
Well, psoriatic disease has two little categories under it. There's psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, and I suffer from the skin disease psoriasis. And I first noticed it back in the early 90s when I was training for the 92 Olympic team. I had these red flaky patches on my elbows, and I didn't really know what it was. I thought maybe the chlorine level was too high, or the fact that maybe there was another, you know, chemical in the pool that was irritating my skin. So I let it go for a couple months, but then I realized, well, no one else is getting this, and it didn't go away. So I went to my dermatologist, and that's when I was first diagnosed with psoriasis. So I'm very honored to be teaming up with Celgene and Otezla for this Show More of You campaign.
All right. So at that point, what did you learn? That you were going to have this to deal with for the rest of your life, or that there was some treatment available?
Well, they gave me some topical ointment just to put on it and just live with it. And I realized as the years went on that mine was more stress-related, so I don't have it 24/7, but I get it when I'm very stressed. And for me, anything to relieve stress really helps keep this in control, my psoriasis. But, you know, it's been a lot of fun with this campaign, the Show More of You campaign. We did a wonderful photo shoot with famed photographer Martin Scholler with four other people, and it was just a really fun day, and we were able to take lots of pictures, but also sort of connect and relate our stories to each other. And If you go to the showmoreofyou.com website, you can see our photos from that photo shoot. And we really encourage people who are suffering from this disease to upload their photos, share their stories, and people who aren't suffering to go on showmoreofyou.com to learn more about what psoriasis is.
Let me ask you this, too, because as somebody who performs and at times worked in a bathing suit, was it extra difficult not only from a comfort standpoint, but just from a visibility standpoint?
That is a great question, because if you think about it, my business suit is my swimsuit, so it's like a free-for-all. You can see everything. And I was very embarrassed, and that's one of the things that I'm honored about this campaign to be a part of, is the fact that I can share my story, and I think anyone can relate to me having been in a swimsuit, you know, 24/7 almost for God knows how many years, and I can tell you how old I am now. But I want people to understand that I've been through this. Don't be embarrassed. Be comfortable in your own skin, and don't let the skin in the way of following your dreams.
We're speaking with Olympic swimming great Dara Torres, talking about psoriatic disease. She's part of a campaign called Show More of You. What are you doing these days, by the way? How do you stay fit?
I love to box, and I love to do bar methods. So I try to do anything that relieves stress so my psoriasis doesn't flare up.
That's interesting. So do you still today try to identify stress triggers and say that that's going to be a problem for me? Let me go through my 5 steps routine or something like that?
100%, because I notice it start to flare up when I do get stressed, and the best thing for me to do is de-stress and decompress, and that way I realize that it doesn't flare up as often as if I'm more aware of it.
Do you have is it psychological and physical stress, or just psychological?
I think just both. You know, I have an 11-year-old running around. That's stress enough as it is.
Yep.
And a couple stepkids, and so, and, you know, and work. There's a lot of reasons why you can get stressed out in today's world, and you know, I just try to keep it as low level stress as I possibly can.
I didn't think about the physical part. When is it possible that when you're burning, who knows, 10,000 calories in a day during a workout, that it could have been physical stress at times?
Well, I make sure I eat lots and lots of calories, so I don't have to worry about that.
Dara Torres, Olympic swimming champ. The campaign, again, is called Show More of You. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter @GordonDeal. The guy to my right is @RadioGavin1, and he's here now with a look at some of the other stories he'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, here's something you don't see every day while waiting for a Big Mac. A customer's act of kindness at a southern Indiana McDonald's sparked a chain reaction of niceness in its drive-thru line. Hunter Hostetler is a cashier at a McDonald's in Scottsburg, about 50 miles north of Louisville, Kentucky. He says an older woman waiting in the restaurant's drive-thru last week decided to pay for the big order of a man with 4 children in a van behind her. Hostetler says she asked him to tell the man Happy Father's Day, then drove away. The kind gesture prompted the man to pay for 2 cars behind him, and that generosity eventually spread to 167 cars by closing time. A woman in one of those cars told local TV that it's wonderful knowing that there's still a lot of great people out there.
Apparently all of them just, though, in southern Indiana.
Yeah, that's where they're all concentrated.
That's a great story.
And this is on the heels, of course, of, and why I like this story a lot, is on the heels of that story, remember a couple weeks ago, that the woman who was waiting for her chicken nuggets wouldn't leave the line because she was so irate about the lack of chicken nuggets or the lack of speed. So they had to call the cops and escort her out of there. So it's good to see that it's not all bad at the McDonald's drive-thru line.
I've done that before.
You had to get escorted away by cops?
That, yes, and paid for somebody behind me, just randomly.
Really?
It's just fun to do.
Yeah. Now, that is, I mean, again, it rarely does it become a chain reaction to 167 cars.
Right. But in the New Jersey and New York area, that only happens once.
Right.
Because then there's got to be something fishy going on, right? Then the guy behind is like, you know, what's the matter with you? You drunk?
Right.
Stop spending money on people you don't know.
Yes, right. Something like this is more apt to happen in certain parts of the country than it is in other parts of the country.
What, 167 cars in a day?
Yeah, I mean, that means it was going pretty much all day, right? You would think?
Yeah,
that's crazy. And remember, Gordon, when the WannaCry ransomware virus was in the news last month, attacking millions of computers worldwide? Well, it looks like there could have been an upside for some lucky folks. Hundreds of drivers in Australia need not pay fines for recent driving infractions after police determined the WannaCry virus infiltrated their roadside cameras. Officials in the state of Victoria confirmed that the ransomware virus infected 55 red light and speeding cameras. Authorities discovered the virus, which mistakenly entered the systems on a maintenance worker's USB drive last week. Victoria Police canceled 590 fines, though the state's acting deputy commissioner still thinks the cameras operated properly in each case.
Wow.
But I guess they're just kind of giving themselves an out just in case anybody thinks something fishy's going on or that the cameras were, you know, somehow infected and charging people that weren't actually going through red lights,
you know,
and that kind of thing.
What's interesting, though, this is not some parking meter infraction.
Right.
That might be like $5-$10. Right. These are speeding and red light infractions,
right,
which normally are much higher than that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
thousands of bucks they're not collecting, probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's a lot of dough.
Wow. Thank you, Mike. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. So Longview, it is Guardians of Safe Spaces for Children. Library staff like Chera Kowalski in Philadelphia have begun taking on the role of first responder in drug overdoses. In at least three major cities, Philly, Denver, San Francisco, library employees now know or are set to learn how to use the drug naloxone, usually known by its brand name Narcan, to help reverse overdoses. CNN says their training tracks with the disastrous national rise in opioid use and an apparent uptick of overdoses in libraries, which often serve as daytime havens for homeless people. McPherson Square Library, where Ms. Kowalski works, sits in the Kensington community of Philadelphia, where drugs and poverty lace daily life there. She is credited with saving at least six lives since April. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's effort to pass the GOP health care plan before the July 4th recess faces a tough road, with 7 to 8 members of his own party opposing a quick vote. Susan Collins of Maine told ABC's This Week she's against cuts to Medicaid and Planned Parenthood.
It's hard for me to see the bill passing this week, but that's up to the majority leader. We could well be in all night, a couple of nights.
The Congressional Budget Office is expected to produce a formal estimate today of the existing legislation's effects. Thousands of people lined the streets for LGBT pride parades yesterday in coast-to-coast events. In a year when leaders are anxious about the president's agenda, parade organizers in New York and San Francisco were more focused on protest. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
We are not at a time when this nation seems to be getting angrier and more fearful and talking about building walls. New York is still talking about building bridges.
President Trump broke from President Obama's practice of issuing a proclamation in honor of Pride Month. Villagers in China visited what used to be their relatives' homes today to mourn loved ones lost when a landslide swept down a mountain, with little hope of finding anyone alive after more than 48 hours of fruitless searching. At least 93 people are missing after the landslide engulfed the village Saturday morning. Before taking their long summer break, the Supreme Court justices are poised to act on the Trump administration's travel ban and a separation of church and state dispute involving a Missouri church playground. But something could overshadow rulings in those high-profile cases if Justice Anthony Kennedy were to use the court's last public session today to announce his retirement, although he has given no public sign that he will step down this year. The federal trial of Martin Shkreli, often described as the most hated man in America, gets underway today. The former pharmaceutical CEO faces charges of securities fraud in Brooklyn. The 34-year-old will confront an 8-count indictment for cheating the drug company he founded out of millions of dollars to pay investors in two hedge funds he ran. He's also accused of defrauding those investors in what prosecutors are calling a Ponzi scheme.
All right. Thank you, Jen. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. We'll finish with this. A 125-pound Neapolitan Mastiff named Martha has been crowned the world's ugliest dog at the Sonoma Marin Fair in California. UPI says Martha's sleepy eyes and rows of floppy skin helped her stand out from the pack of 13 other canines at the 29th annual competition. Martha's owner, Shirley Zindler, says she's just a bit unique. One of the judges said, "Look at her. She's about 300 pounds of skin on 100 pounds of dog." Ms. Zindler is an animal control officer who also serves as president of the Rescue Project's board of directors, rescued Martha from a local shelter. For representing the perfect cute-ugly mix, 3-year-old Martha was awarded $1,500, a trip to New York, and a shiny trophy. Throughout her impressive win, Martha laid on her side with her skin drooping onto the ground, waiting to return home, where her raucous snores leave her banned from the bedroom. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.